13 minutes after 5 o'clock, final hour of Bullseye on the Afternoon on AM 930 WEOL. We're on till 6. He's Matt Douglas. I'm Andy Bulbarch. Buckeye Roundtable comes your way when we're done at 6 o'clock. Big weekend at the box office. A lot of great things to watch on TV. Well, I think my TiVo is really working overtime. Well, it's not really a TiVo, but it's something to that effect.
I don't think TiVo's been around for a while.
No, it hasn't been. It's been a little while. But here to talk about all that and then some with us, we've got Michael Morshauer, our Hollywood insider, joining us on the hotline right now. Michael, how are you, my friend?
Great. Good to talk to you guys again.
Well, great to have you on. And, boy, I want to begin with this. I've not seen it yet, although I've heard some mixed reactions about Making a Murderer Part 2. Now, I've had some legitimate concerns about this only because everybody kind of knows the story now, and I've kind of wondered what exactly they can uncover about Part 2. What have you heard about this so far? Anything good, bad, or indifferent?
Mostly kind of mixed reviews as well. I myself haven't started watching it, and I think the biggest reason is the same thing. Since the original season of the show came out, any development in the case has been sort of discussed online and picked apart there, and it's very easy to find all this information. So it kind of takes the mystery out of watching the series, and that's what most of the kind of early reviews for the series have said, is that it's more of a procedural that's very sort of plotting and kind of going through the steps of this legal case as opposed to really telling the very fascinating story that the first season did. So I think more than anything, it kind of begs the question of, can you really do a follow-up or a sequel to a true crime documentary or series in the internet age? Like when you can just get on Reddit and find out all of the latest details, are you really waiting with bated breath for a second season of more information? So that's kind of the common complaint I've heard, is that it's just already out there. It doesn't really seem necessary to kind of continue to watch, more hours of the show.
Well, that I thought the first season sort of drug on. I thought they could have done that documentary in about 5 episodes and kept it interesting and unique, but instead they tried to do it in 8 or 10 or whatever it was. And I thought there were a couple of them that just were there to kind of be a buffer. I don't know.
Yeah,
that's my take.
That's definitely sort of a thing that Netflix has a problem with in general. They kind of seem to fill out a number of episodes as opposed to just sort of presenting a story. And I think that definitely has an effect here with Making a Murderer, where they probably could have done an hour or 2 hour long follow-up special as opposed to a whole series. And I think that probably lends to a lot of the sort of mixed reviews that we're seeing about the show.
Yeah, that was my major concern. I mean, I think everybody gets excited because the first one was so awesome, so easy to binge watch, and then you come out with this, and it's like, okay, well, what kind of story can you tell to us that we don't necessarily already know? So I think that just, it adds another layer there that I'm not so sure everybody's going to take too kindly to. And speaking of series on Netflix that weren't taken too kindly to, boy, Luke Cage canceled. Any surprise there, Michael? Only because, boy, we thought Marvel was kind of an untouchable there for a while, but this comes after they decided not to re-up Iron Fist. Were you surprised at all to see Luke Cage get canceled by Netflix?
I was very surprised. With Iron Fist, it had sort of been really poorly reviewed and didn't really have as big of an online following as Luke Cage seemed to. And the staying power of Marvel has proven over the last decade or so, they really can do anything and people will enjoy it and keep coming back to it. And so I was very surprised. I thought it was one of the stronger shows that they had on Netflix. The Hollywood Reporter, I looked this up, they're saying that the cancellation was due to creative differences and an inability to agree to terms for a third season of the show. Mm. I am curious to see how much of this is affected by the fact that Disney sometime next year is launching their own streaming service, a sort of competitor to Netflix. I don't know if Luke Cage would necessarily be revived there, but it's interesting to see if this is kind of the first step in a power struggle, I guess, between two really big entertainment companies trying to fight it out for their content. I guess we'll kind of have to wait to see, but that would be my best guess as to why this got canceled. I was very surprised. I think it's been a big hit for Netflix.
So this new Disney streaming service, you said this is about a year out. We're looking at late 2019, early 2020. I think that was the last I had heard about it.
Yeah, that's sort of what I've been hearing. They haven't announced anything official yet.
And I'm anxious to see what kinds of content they bring to the table, because Disney seems to work with an unlimited budget, but it's going to be very, very fascinating to see how that affects what Netflix does, at least until the launch of that. Boy, we got to bring this up, only because we asked Al about this last week and in the week prior to. I just wish we could take politics out of the equation with this show. Unfortunately, I don't think that we can. General thoughts on the first episode of The Conners without Roseanne?
You know, I think that it actually it surprised me with how consistent it was from the rebooted version of Roseanne that we saw this past spring. It was still consistently pretty funny, led by two just fantastic actors in John Goodman and Laurie Metcalf. It was, of course, they did sort of have to deal with Roseanne's departure kind of head on, and I think that they did it in a way that sort of addressed larger issues and themes that the show has tried before, like drug addiction specifically and opioid addiction. So I don't think it really missed a beat as far as storytelling. I think that, you know, you can look at the politics whatever way you want to look at it, and that's kind of its own thing. But as far as the quality of the show, I thought it remained pretty consistent. It's still a big hit for HBO, or I'm sorry, for ABC, and it didn't really drop any viewers from the last episode of Roseanne from the spring. So it'll be interesting to see how they go forward with it, how they continue to kind of address her character's absence, or if they don't and they just sort of make it its own show. But in the one episode I saw, it was kind of still the same sort of family comedy with a little bit of social conscience that made Roseanne kind of appealing in the first place. So it'll be interesting to see, how they keep going with it.
Michael, what do you think? It seems so rare that you change a major character in a TV show and the show continues to have success. As you mentioned, that first episode had good ratings. But I think a lot of people were just curious as to how they'd move on and what they do to Roseanne. But, I mean, Two and a Half Men fell because of the loss of, Charlie Sheen. It really seems rare that you have a main character like that who steps aside and the shows continue to have success.
Yeah, it certainly got, it doesn't really have the odds in favor, but, you know, this was a big hit for ABC last spring. And of course the politics really brought in a lot of viewers. So if they don't kind of continue to have that sort of political edge and really sort of have that thing that keeps people bringing people back intrigued, then I think it's going to struggle, and I think it's going to be a quick axe for the network. But I also think, given the sort of storm surrounding it, it made a lot of sense for them to bring it back and just try and work with that talented crew that they'd assembled and kind of continue to work off the buzz, even if it's not necessarily the greatest publicity. It still works and still draws eyeballs. So I don't know. I think this is really a toss-up as far as quality is concerned. But certainly I think you're right. If people aren't really interested in seeing a show without Roseanne and are certainly just watching it, you know, rubbernecking to see what kind of happened in the aftermath of all of it, then certainly its ratings will drop and we won't see it very long. So that's definitely a great question moving forward.
Michael Warschauer, our Hollywood insider, our guest here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. It's got to help more than hurt, right, to have these rumors circulating about Matthew Broderick apparently being Aunt Jackie, a.k.a. Laurie Metcalf's boyfriend, in future episodes. I think that's only got to add more fuel to the fire here, right? There's a lot more star power there.
Absolutely, and I wouldn't be surprised if we continue to see guest stars. Mary Steenburgen dropped by in the first episode of this season. So it wouldn't surprise me if they try and, you know, continue to build buzz while also kind of changing the conversation by bringing in big names, like Matthew Broderick or others. We'll have to wait and see. But I certainly believe that's an easy way for them to keep bringing eyeballs to a show that is really just trying to find a new direction.
Well, we'll take the conversation a new direction. We'll talk about the box office here because, boy, is it doing really well. Boy, October has traditionally done well. I believe the numbers are up at least 11% from last year, if not more. Halloween led the way, did extraordinarily well. And again, that really wasn't a big surprise. Venom is still doing well, despite some of the poor initial reviews, while First Man is still just kind of doing okay. I guess that's not really a huge surprise, though, because those that were initially critical of it figured, you know what, this isn't the kind of movie that's going to bring people out in the first week or even the first couple of weeks. It should be gradual succession with that movie First Man about Neil Armstrong. Anything else you see in there that kind of surprised you a little bit?
I think Venom has been a huge surprise for me. That movie really did not get reviewed very well, but has continued to be a really solid performer over the last few weeks. I think with First Man, it is kind of surprising. I know it had its own sort of controversy and definitely is one of those award season movies that can kind of start with a small audience and grow, but it was coming from Damien Chazelle, who directed La La Land, and coming off of all of that. It has Ryan Gosling, who's a huge star. This sort of had all of the makings of being a big award season movie. And even after it opened small, a lot of industry people were saying that it could follow a path of a film like Argo, which started with a pretty small opening and ended up winning Best Picture. That doesn't seem to be the case here in the early goings. Box office isn't the only determination of an award season movie, but it's a big one. And I think it's been surprising to see it perform so poorly despite generally really positive reviews. The only other big surprise I kind of see in the box office is sort of A Star Is Born has kind of been a consistent mid-box office performer. It's not been a number one film any of the weeks it's been out. It's not really been a disappointment. It's just sort of been a consistent earner. So it'll be interesting to see how that film kind of continues to earn over the course of the award season. Will there be, you know, a bigger push as more and more people go to see it and it gets closer to awards time? Or is it just going to be sort of a steady performer that doesn't really go anywhere big at the box office, but maybe does once we get closer to the Oscars?
Obviously, some really big movies coming up here as well. I went last weekend to see A Star Is Born, and I was blown away by some of the previews that I saw. You know, Bohemian Rhapsody is one of those that has been really, really promoted well in recent months. I think that should get a lot of people to come in. The Mule, the new Clint Eastwood movie coming out, should be a lot of fun also. Are there any that are coming out in the next couple of months that have you pretty excited?
There's one called Can You Ever Forgive Me, starring Melissa McCarthy, and it's based on a true story about a kind of down-and-out writer who began forging literary letters from famous authors and selling them to make money. And it's getting really great reviews for Melissa McCarthy. I think that she's starting to become a big-time Oscar contender as a result of this film, so that's one I'm very excited for. And also Widows looks fantastic with Viola Davis, about a group of widows of bank robbers who go on to try and finish their late husband's last job. That one was directed by Steve McQueen of 12 Years a Slave and Hunger and Shame, and it has me very excited. I think it's going to be a really great film. The early buzz has been good. Whether or not it's an award season contender has been a debate, but it certainly looks like it will be worth everybody's time and money.
Yeah, it seems like a risky move. They've got Liam Neeson in it, but it turns out, at least from the previews, it looks like all he does is die. And you're kind of like, what?
Yeah.
Hopefully there's a bigger role for Liam Neeson
we'll
than
see.
That.
Yeah, it's hard. It honestly looks we'll like they're out, just yeah. like, here's an action movie, Liam Neeson. And then you're like, what? He dies?
Yeah.
And then his wife is blowing stuff up, and you're like, oh, that's pretty cool.
Well, hopefully it lives up to the billing. You can't just throw Liam Neeson in the previews and then just take him out 5 seconds in.
They killed Drew Barrymore in Scream 30 seconds into the movie.
Yeah, you're right. They did. Well, I've got to ask you about one of my favorite shows, The Sopranos. And I've been reading about these rumors about a Sopranos prequel. Any truth to this rumor? And what kinds of details can you share?
Well, as far as I know, this film appears to be happening. It was announced a while back. It comes from an original script by the series creator Dave Chase and writer Lawrence Connor. And in July, they even picked a director, Alan Taylor, who is mostly known for Thor, The Dark World. He directed Terminator Genesis, but he's directed several episodes of Game of Thrones, as well as The Sopranos and several other TV shows. So it seems like they have everything in place and that they're actually starting to go forward with it. There haven't been a lot of details, though, released beyond that. Just this past week, the rumor came out that, well, it had been known for a little while that it takes place in the 60s, but what we've been hearing more recently is that it's going to follow Tony's father and his uncle Jr. As it sort of gives us an insight into the family when Tony was a kid, and will sort of take place well before any of the events in The Sopranos, but definitely kind of give us insight to the backstory of a bunch of the characters from the show. So that's really all we know. We don't have a real timeline. We do know that the working title is The Many Saints of Newark. So like you, I am waiting to hear more and hopefully find out a little bit more about the Soprano clan.
Cannot wait for that. That sounds like it could be really, really awesome. So I would love to see them get moving on that. All right, Michael, before we cut you loose, my friend, what are this week's picks to click? What should we be watching for?
All right, I've got two, and they're both on Netflix. The first is The Haunting of Hill House. It's the perfect Halloween series to watch at this time of year. It will scare you. It is a genuinely scary show about a family living in a haunted mansion and the aftermath of that. I just finished it last night and can't recommend it enough. The other one is Wanderlust, a new show starring the always fantastic Toni Collette about a couple who try and liven up their marriage by starting an open relationship. It's funny. It's moving. It is a good alternative if you're not into getting scared by monsters and demons. So both are worth checking out.
Right, cool. So one side of the spectrum to the other. I like it. Good stuff. Just kind of
absolutely.
It depends on what you're in the mood for that night, I suppose. Awesome, awesome stuff. Michael, we appreciate the time as always, my friend, and we look forward to doing this again soon.
Fantastic. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Again, Michael Warschauer, our Hollywood guru, joining us here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. A couple of shows for you to watch for on Netflix. Yeah.